What's going on, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets presented by So Rare, live on Game Plus Network, as well as our FTN Network YouTube page. Chris Meany hanging out. The old band back together. George is running the show, so expect a couple bats, maybe a random golf video of a Nova Scotia tourism commercial at the end of the show. Who knows? He's got all kinds of surprises for us. We have a great guest lined up today on the show. Jonathan Mbemba is joining us from Fantasy Alarm. He is the senior manager content creator over there at Fantasy Alarm. And we did hear from Howard Bender last week. So it's been a Fantasy Alarm show over the past couple weeks. He's also the host over at Better Network and Sirius XM, Jim Pemba 777 on the Twitter machine. Seven. We're going to talk about the FSGA draft best ball. He's the former champ. He's the reigning champ. So why not get him on and we will talk about his team. And we're going to talk about his strategy overall as well. He had a couple appealing, for me, in my opinion, anyways, appealing running backs. He did take Saquon Barkley in the first round. We'll talk about Saquon. I'm sure he's not too worried about Saquon. He did take a different running back on another team who is potentially holding out as well. Spoiler alert. We are going to talk about a couple running backs today. Javonte Williams, Rashad Penny, Alexander Mattison. We'll talk about a couple mid-round value running backs that you can attack in your drafts as well. It is best ball, but we can still use it for those who like to do some redrafts and things like that. So again, he is the champ, FSGA champ, and we're going to get after it in just a little bit. Here's a little bit of a sneak peek. Boom. A little bit of a sneak peek. That's our team. That's our team. Bats right away. Here's a sneak peek. Let's give the sneak peek there. We're all over the place. There we go. George, I'll let you run the show then if you want to. There's the sneak peek of what he has going on in the squad. So we're going to talk about some of those players. But you see he has Amari Cooper on the squad. So we're going to dive into the Cleveland Browns a little bit as well. We've been doing some team previews here on Mean Streets. And the Browns are interesting. The AFC is loaded. The division's pretty good, too. Like, the Bengals are obviously fantastic. The Ravens have a new look with the new offensive coordinator. There's new weapons in town for Lamar Jackson. The Steelers, you know, you can never count them out. Every time you do, Tomlin says, I'm still here, and we're going to punch a ticket into the playoffs or give you a 500 record. And that's what we saw last year from the Steelers. And then we have the Brownies in a full season with Deshaun Watson under center. How is this Cleveland team going to look? Is it going to be more pass happy this season? So we're going to talk about the Browns in a little bit. Some MLB picks and props around the diamond for you guys. It is Shohei Ohtani Day. Maybe his last start as an Angel. Maybe his last start in Anaheim. Maybe he won't get traded. The MLB trade deadline is a couple weeks away at the end of the month. There's a lot of rumors, a lot of reports. Everybody's now talking about it. We've been talking about it probably too long on this show since day one. Right before the season started, we talked about Shohei, how long he would last. He was going to finish the season in Anaheim with the Angels. They swept the Yankees. They probably feel like they have a chance to make the postseason, but they really don't. I don't think so. They've had so many injuries over the past couple of weeks. Trout's going to be away from the team for at least another month. Guys that have, you know, were brought in that were playing really good. Gio, Drury. These guys are not with the team. Rendon is on the IL again, third or fourth time already this season. I don't think the Angels are going to trade him. I think that they're going to roll the dice, try to sign him in the offseason. I think he's going to be gone, and it would be a big miss if the Halos didn't trade arguably the best baseball player of all time to let him walk in the offseason and get nothing in return. I think that would be a big loss for the Angels, and they desperately need a lot of pieces to be competitive and kind of right the ship in Anaheim. So I don't think he's going to go, but this is from DraftKings. I found this morning. Certain states do apply. Shohei's his next team after August 1st. The Angels are favored just for him to stay there at minus 170. The Dodgers at 8-1. The Giants at 9-1. Any other team at 10-1, even though there are teams listed here, the Braves at 10-1. The Yankees at 14-1. MLB Dreams Orioles at 15-1. He tagged me last night in a pitcher with Shohei in a Baltimore uniform. I threw up five times. The Mets at 18-1. The Rays at 22-1. And George, you wish, bud. But the Red Sox are on the board at 25-1 for Shohei to be a Red Sox. No Jays there. I don't think the Jays are in the running, but I would imagine every team is making a call. And if you're the Angels, you're listening to every team. FNTS. What am I doing here today? FTN Fantasy Show. Usually we just take Fridays off. Maybe we should, George. Maybe we should just take them off. SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, Channel 87 on the dial every Saturday, 9 to 11. Myself, Jake Seeley, and Lauren Carpenter. We got Aaron Schatz joining us today, on the show, really looking forward to this conversation with Aaron. We've already chopped it up about a couple NFL teams that we want to talk about. There's a couple from, of course, you see their FTN Football Almanac, the 2023 version, which you can catch over at FTN Fantasy, the pre-order there at $29.99. All kinds of amazing stuff in the guide. And of course, he's the creator of DVOA and Football Outsiders, the man behind Football Outsiders. And just really looking forward to talking about a team standpoint. I know a lot of it is all fantasy, and we're going to talk a lot of fantasy football on this show and other shows, and of course the show over at SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, but just going to dive into the team aspect. There's a few appealing teams. Cleveland is one of them, in my opinion, but also the Atlanta Falcons, right? How is Atlanta's offense going to look? The past 3 years, this team has taken, you know, skilled players in the first round and early, and Kyle Pitts and Drake London and now Bijan Robinson. How's this team going to look like this season? Can they put all those pieces together? Is Desmond Ridder the truth? That division is completely up for grabs. So it'll be a fun conversation with Aaron. Look for that. He's going to join us around 10:20 Eastern time. If you just want to catch one of the best in the industry, drop by. But we will be with you from 9 to 11. Again, that is Channel 87 on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio. Let's take a quick break here. We're going to switch gears, talk about a little bit of a best ball strategy from Jonathan. We'll get into the Cleveland Browns. We do have a lot to get to here. It will be a lot of football. If you're looking for some MLB picks and props, if you want them now, the guys have you covered over at ftnbets.com, but we do have a few that we're going to dive into a little bit later on in the show. Love to hear from you guys as well. Do you think Ohtani is going to get traded? Where would you like to see him go? And what's the asking price here? 8 prospects? A hitting pitcher or a hitting prospect gets 3 to 4. Pitching, an elite pitcher gets 3 to 4 as well. Like, is it that easy to say, listen, we want 6 or 7 prospects? And how many teams are willing to give up 6 or 7 prospects, knowing that he may not even sign with you? He may just be a guy that you have for the final couple months of the season. And then, you know, you're just not in the range of giving him $600 million that he's probably going to get, maybe stake in the team and seats for life. Who knows? It's probably going to be in the contract as well. I see John. He's hanging out. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring him in. We'll talk about his team, the best ball squad. We'll get into the Cleveland Browns here as well. A lot to get to. Keeper Lock, Mean Streets continues here on Game Plus Network. Champ is here. Welcome in the champ, FSGA 2022 best ball champion in the house. It is John and Pemba, Jim Pemba 777 on the Twitter machine, senior manager content over at Fantasy Alarm, also the host over at Better Network and SiriusXM Fantasy. Happy Friday, good sir. Welcome to the Mean Streets.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me on. Yeah, happy Friday to you as well. Yeah, Howard Bender still got my ring from the FSPA. He's supposed to mail it to me, holding that thing hostage, but I got the hardware just waiting for it to show up.
What's taking so long for Howard to send that over to you?
I have, must have been got lost in the mail somewhere. He came all the way over to Massachusetts for my wedding and then forgot to bring it. So, we got to coordinate ourselves here.
Dude, who was the star player for you last year? Who's the guy that brought you to the ship? I know there's a couple guys. I mean, you had a winning team, of course.
Last year was honestly just a perfect storm of like everybody that I was in on just had monster season. So I was someone that was taking Austin Eckler first overall in drafts. I ended up getting him where I picked in the draft last year. Jalen Hurts was a quarterback I took as often as I could in drafts, and I even paired him up with Justin Fields in this league, and it's a best ball format, so those two were just dominating week in, week out. I drafted TJ Hawkinson. I had Devontae Adams, so like the team just was an absolute unit last year, so it was fun to watch. I had a very successful fantasy year last year for sure.
No kidding. Absolutely. And when you have Fields and Hurts, right, you had the breakout of both guys, especially from a fantasy standpoint with Justin Fields. Like, since we're on Fields just now, do you feel like Justin Fields, like people are saying he's in for a breakout campaign? You know, from a fantasy standpoint, he broke out last year with 1,100 rushing yards, finishing as quarterback 6-5 in fantasy points per game. Can he take that next step as a breakout passer this year with the addition of DJ Moore, in your opinion?
I mean, I'm hopeful that sort of given the next year in this offense, a little bit more familiarity and the system that they have, and the fact that the team did invest in getting him some help on the offensive side, not just DJ Moore, but they drafted an offensive lineman, you know, in the first round as well to kind of help secure and keep him protected. You know, I like to draw a lot of parallels to some of these quarterbacks that come into the league where initially their passing game is kind of off, but their athleticism, their mobility is carrying their fantasy value forward. We saw that with Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Last year, Jalen Hurts was sort of a similar comparison. And then these teams, they go out and get them a number one wide receiver. We saw Stephon Diggs go to Buffalo. Josh Allen explodes. Mark Andrews kind of came on for Baltimore. Lamar Jackson has his MVP season. Jalen Hurts gets A.J. Brown and has Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert there instead of throwing to Jalen Reagor and Arcega Whiteside. It's just a huge boom of talent. And now you look at what the Bears did. They get DJ Moore. Now he kind of reshifts the organization. Darnell Mooney is the number two. We'll see if Claypool can become something. But you know, he's not throwing to N'Keal Harry and Dante Pettis,
right?
Like he's throwing to actual NFL caliber wide receivers. I'm hopeful that that will translate to a successful fantasy season. He doesn't have to go throw for 4,500 yards. Now, he's been quoted as saying he wants to be the first Bear to throw for 4,000 yards or whatever it is. But if he just increases a little bit of that passing yardage while maintaining the rushing, I mean, he could very easily be a top four, top three overall fantasy quarterback this year.
Absolutely agree. I mean, I think he could live in the 3,500 range. That would be a massive improvement. That'd be roughly 1,500 more yards than he threw last season. And I think it just puts everybody in their actual spots, like you alluded to, right? Mooney's more of a two. Claypool's more of a three. Komet had a nice breakout campaign. DJ Moore has been among the leaders in receiving yards since 2019. I think he's seventh among wide receivers. Doesn't have the touchdowns like some of the other guys in that group, but I think you said it perfectly, right? You bring in a guy like Diggs, you bring in a guy even like Cole Beasley, good route runners at the time in Buffalo, where I believe Josh Allen was throwing to Kelvin Benjamin. Well, not often, exactly. But that was one of their big moves, right? And then Philly, you mentioned AJ Brown, bringing in some route runners that can help out the quarterbacks. And I think we will see that leap forward with DJ Moore being brought in for Justin Fields. I definitely like him as a target this season as well, even though you're not, you know, getting him in that mid to late range like you would have got him last year in the draft. You mentioned Saquon. You mentioned that you took Eckler in the first. Let's bring up the George, if you don't mind, the first five rounds. Let's see. There's the peak of the team. We can roll through that in a second, but if you want to transition into the first five rounds here, there you go. So we can see how this draft unfolded, and you did go running back early again with Saquon as the third running back off the board. For the iTunes and Spotify listeners, the draft is follow 14 teams, best ball, as you mentioned. Kevin and I picked in that first spot. We didn't take too much time with JJ there at pick one. Jamar Chase, Cooper Kupp, CMC, Eckler, Tyreek Hill, Kelsey, Diggs, Saquon and yourself, Jacobs, Chubb, Adams, Brown, AJ, that is, and then Bijan at the end, and a double tap there with Bijan and Jonathan Taylor. In this spot, you had some time, I guess, to think about it. Was Saquon a guy that you felt like could potentially fall to you? Was that your plan? You were going to go RB originally, or maybe you had Kelsey or wide receiver in mind?
Yeah, if Kelsey had gotten there, I think the way the draft board had fallen, that was probably the pick I was going to make. But once he went off the board a couple picks ahead of me, kind of committed to the running back. You know, we're so used to drafting in all different formats. You kind of have to get yourself reacclimated to different ADPs and draft boards. So you come into this draft over in RP Sports and you see kind of where players are lined up. And some other drafts, Austin Eckler's, you know, right down at the bottom end of the first round on RTs in the first half of the first round. So I wasn't able to get my guy in this draft. But Barkley was kind of there. This is a 14-team league, like you said, so it gets pretty deep. So Barkley probably went a little bit earlier than I would have liked to take him. But at this point in the draft, I'm kind of looking at the board. I'm like, all right, well, he has the opportunity to be the number one running back in fantasy football, assuming he doesn't miss any games. We know what he can do in the passing game. We know what he can do running the football, and he's such a massive part of this offense. And I'm really a believer in teams that have, like, a set coach and offensive coordinator, and we've seen so much – you know, change in the Giants over the last 4 years, that Brian Daboll's there. Last year, success. Year two now, implementation of his offense, getting more of his guys into the system to prepare them to be a successful football team, that if Saquon does decide to play, which I don't think he's going to actually miss games. I think this is more of a posturing situation because it's never worked out for running back that decided to not play. You know, I think that he's going to be put in a spot to be really successful this year. So willing to grab him there over the rest of the guys that are on the board.
I'm sure you remember this, and Giants fans will definitely remember too. I mean, a couple of years ago, they're running quarterback sneaks, you know, and at third and eight, and no guys in motion at all. I remember last year, it was Dable's first practice, and I think it was Saquon who said it is like, what an amazing practice. Like, we're actually having guys in motion in practice, which is something we just didn't try at all last year. So some creativity to the offense, and now some added pieces in this offense as well for Daniel Jones. And I'm in agreement with you. I don't think he's going to miss any time. You know, one guy that you did draft that was in my queue, and I thought it was going to take him, I forget what round it is, George. If you have the full board, we can bring it up, but it's not a huge deal. It was Zamir White. I had him queued up, and I was like, you know what, just in case, you never know at this point of the draft, 14 teams, best ball, here it is here. Where you took him would have been, geez, near the end.
Yeah, 15.
15, right? So at that point, absolutely worth a flyer. And I assume that you think that Jacobs will suit up just like Saquon, but who knows, right?
Yeah, listen, if you follow me on Twitter, I have not been quiet about my likeness of Zamir White this year, just kind of where he was going in best ball drafts. And I'm almost actually a little bit different on my opinion of Jacobs than Saquon, because I don't think Josh Jacobs likes being there. Josh McDaniel has a habit now of turning players against him pretty early on in his tenures. As head coach, we saw that in Denver. It didn't last long there. Seems like his welcome is quickly getting worn out in Las Vegas as well. So, yeah, I think Jacobs is going to hold up. I think he is pretty determined to try to either force his way out of town, you know, or wait the maximum amount of time that he can miss before signing and then play. But, you know, we saw what McDaniel was willing to do. Just sit Derek Carr out. You know what? Your time's done here. I can see the same thing happening with Josh Jacobs. And I like Zamir White. I think the athletic profile for him is very appealing. He's a big back that ran a 4.440. He can get in the red zone if they want to have to use him that way. And we know that McDaniels likes to use multiple running backs sort of in his system. And if Jacobs doesn't want to be there, he may not just be there. He could, my groin hurts today, my hamstring hurts today, and kind of play that game while getting paid. So late round draft picks for best ball, I've been all in on Zamir White this year.
A tough world, man, for running backs, but you're not wrong about Jacobs. And this has been going on for quite some time, even before, you know, of course, when the new regime came, they decided not to pick up the fifth year option. They gave him touches in the Hall of Fame game. That was strange for everybody, maybe himself as well. Then they ran him into the ground. He's the rushing champ. Right. And they're not getting any contract. Right. And the way that this Raiders team, the direction, I would agree. If there's a guy that's holding out between the two, I mean, it's not going to be Pollard. He hasn't been, you know, the guy for ever, really. This is his first crack at it. Saquon's been around the heartbeat of the offense, I think, in New York. And for Josh Jacobs, I could certainly see him say, you killed us with the pick. We were like,
they're a losing team. They're not going to win many games this year.
They're not.
You know, at least in Saquon's case, you'd be like, all right, listen, we're going to be a playoff team. We have an actual chance to compete here. I can be part of that. And maybe if I put forth another full healthy season, you know, I can get another contract elsewhere that'll be worth the while. But nothing is really trending towards Jacobs being a favorable play here. I haven't drafted him in any leagues at all.
No, he's easy fade, I think, for me as well. Hurts last year, Fields last year, Josh Allen this year. Is it a strategy of yours to get a rushing quarterback, attack the quarterback position early? That's something you like to do in all formats, redraft as well, or
particular best. Yeah, guy? I just love the floor that the mobility brings to a quarterback, especially a guy that isn't just like a mobile quarterback. When they get in the red zone is really when they use their legs, you know? So you have the rushing touchdown upside with Josh Allen. You've seen the rushing touchdown upside for 2 years now with Jalen Hurts. So they may not have the gaudy rushing numbers that we saw out of Lamar Jackson a few years ago, or even Justin Fields last year, but the touchdowns count. So when they get in the red zone, they're going in that direction with those two guys here. Plus I also look at Allen this year. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a chance that Jalen Hurts might have had a ceiling season last year. So if he regresses even a little bit, you know, then he's not really worthy of like the top two picks that I've seen him go at. Mahomes, again, like fantastic year. But if there's any little momentum of a drop off here, you know, Allen has put consistent seasons back to back yards of like 4,500 yards, 30 plus touchdowns, 700 plus rushing yards. If he just stays status quo, his 24 and a half fantasy points per game at the position is good enough to be a QB1. So sure, there could be a guy that comes out, does a dark horse, has a breakout QB1 year, but I don't see a scenario where Allen, unless he gets hurt, is falling out of that top three. And because I think he has the potential to be that QB1 with the rushing upside, I've taken him first out of those two when it's come to me drafting a QB early this year.
Yeah, it's a good call, John, because like you said, he's been doing it for a couple of years. The back-to-back seasons as QB1 there. You know, the game was canceled last season. He did miss an extra game there. And Jalen Hurts did have that breakout campaign. I feel like the Eagles, with the schedule being a little bit more difficult, and he could struggle at times, new offensive coordinator, also a new defensive coordinator, you know, teams adapting for Jalen Hurts. But I also think maybe more competitive games would be good for Jalen Hurts and the other weapons in this offense, maybe more pass attempts where they just kind of leaned on the run game in the second half when they were up in a majority of their games, especially in that first half. Let's get back to some of the running backs that you took. George, if you can chuck John's team up here, there are a few appealing high upside guys here. You know, Alexander Mattison, of course, now without Dalvin Cook and Cook waiting for a contract. Javonte Williams, I feel like, has been, you know, this is a guy, I think a month ago, you know, we were talking about him as a 9th, 10th round pick over to Underdog Fantasy as a potential league winner there. You get him here a little bit earlier than that. Of course, it is a 14 team league. Rashad Penny's in Philadelphia with a mixed backfield. You got some guys like in some new places here, and Singletary is another one of those guys. Talk me through the rest of your running backs and the strategy that you like to employ here.
Yeah, I mean, I was really just looking for, like you said, this is a best ball league that is 14 teams. I'm looking for guys that have that high upside potential output. Now, Javonte Williams could land on the pup and not play for the first 4 weeks, and you know, maybe I'll be scrambling for a little bit, but the expectation, and he himself is kind of saying, putting out there, like, I feel ready to go. If they'll let me on the field early in training camp, like, I'll be out there and ready to go. A lot of people we'll look to what J.K. Dobbins had to go through and sort of the limitations that he had coming back as sort of the warning signs behind taking Javonte Williams. But it's a different offense, right? It's a different style of team. You look at that, the running back room that they have there. They brought in Samaje Perine, but they don't really have much else behind there. So even if it's a slow build for Javonte Williams, if he's ready to be the guy in the second half of the season, a couple games into the year, and now his snap count is 70%, 80%, then he's probably should have been drafted before the 5th round in that case. So in these formats, drafting with a bunch of sharp people for sure. You know, I had to reach an ADP a little bit and take guys that I felt like I wanted to build my team around because they have that boom weekly upside when it comes to best ball. So felt that way about Javonte, feel that way about Rashard Penny. I know DeAndre Swift is there. Both of those guys have extensive injury histories here. They both can be very impactful, but this is an offense that they like to run a lot of RPOs. They like to use multiple running backs in this system. Now, obviously, Miles Sanders was a clear-cut one for them last year, but I feel like Penny and Swift sort of muddy the waters a little bit more in terms of a talent gap. You know, it's not Miles Sanders, Gainwell, Boston Scott. It's now Penny and Swift sort of right there that can either one could really take the load, or it could be 1 week one guy, 1 week the next, which is, again, fine in best ball. I don't have to worry about setting that lineup. And we've talked about Zamir White already. Singletary for me is just sort of a safety net. I like that he's a veteran. I like that they brought him into that organization. He had a breakout year. I think he ran like the 4th most routes out of the backfield last year for running backs when he was in Buffalo. So he sort of brings that skill set. He's a good pass protector. Andrew Cooper over at Fantasy Slam does a great job sort of breaking down sort of PFF passing protection grades, and talks about how Pierce was so bad at pass protection while Singletary was very good, and it's a reason why they could take Pierce off the field and have Singletary sort of fill in on that role. So and if something happens there to Pierce, Singletary is certainly capable of being a lead running back in that offense as well. So taking a little bit of a handcuff, but a guy that I think could have some individual value himself. I'm not a big fan of taking guys that are pure handcuffs that needs someone else to get injured necessarily to be on the field, with the one exception of the flyer I took on Zamir White at the end of the draft.
Yeah, that's actually a good segue into Madison in just a second, but I just feel like Javonte could really be a league winner. We all know the skill set that he has, and who cares? Like, even if for me as an owner, and I have some shares, and for you as well, like, if he is limited in September, I think that's fine. Like, ease him back in, and then you get him into a full workload, and then come October, November, maybe December, this is a guy that in Sean Payton's offense, what we've seen from Ingram and Kamara years ago, I mean, both guys were top 12 fantasy options at the running back position. Samaje Perine can still eat maybe out of the backfield, catching some passes. I think it could be a really good 1-2 punch. Alexander Mattison. So Alexander Mattison is a guy in the past. It's like, oh, you know, handcuff, you cook. And I always felt like, for me, I don't know how you feel about handcuffs. I don't like to get my own handcuffs. I like to get to other people's handcuffs. Yeah. I want to maximize my upside. It just felt like for years, like Mattison, when there's no cook, he's had some really good campaigns, like good games. And this is from a splits tool we have over at FTN Daily and FTN Fantasy. You can see, like, just over the last 62 games with these two guys, like, together, there's six games out of the split. Now, again, it's a very small sample size, but you see the rushing attempts from 5 to 19, the rushing yards from 21 to 79. How about the receiving yards from 5 to 36? And then you see the touches from 6 to 23 opportunities, carries plus targets from 6 to 24. And then even in a half point setting, a guy that averaged 4 points per game with Cook, and then 18 when Cook is off the field. Is this the kind of production you see here for Alexander Mattison? He may not be super efficient, but is this a guy that you think is going to be a 20 touch roughly running back for Minnesota this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can certainly be in that range. Now, obviously, look at the offense that's in Minnesota now. They're definitely going to be looking to throw the ball a little bit more. They have Justin Jefferson. Obviously, they traded for TJ Hockenson. They draft Jordan Addison, which I think is an upgrade, obviously, over Adam Thielen, who is slowing down, getting older, getting hurt. And I actually am pretty bullish on Kirk Cousins. So I like that passing attack this year for Minnesota. But they do have a lead running back, and people were very down on Dalvin Cook, you know, coming into this year. I know his situation was a bit murky, but they were also sort of looking at his production. And I didn't really see anything that would, you know, not warrant another year of him being a workhorse running back in that offense if he was there. Next man up, Alexander Mattison. Again, like you pointed out there in that graphic, when he is that guy called upon, he is the one that's getting those touches. Does he get 20 touches a game? I don't know if that's the case in this offense, but 15, 16 carries a game, maybe a couple catches. Perfectly fine with that kind of involvement. A team that I think is going to score a lot of points, so hopefully the touchdown upside is there. I'm a little worried about the inefficiency, a guy that, you know, averaged less than 4 yards a carry over the last couple of years, but if the workload's going to be there for him, you know, the volume sometimes can just outpace the poor efficiency.
Philly's doing it right, aren't they? Like, of all the talks in terms of running backs and the money that's spent, and then we're talking about Minnesota, a new regime, analytical driven, moving on from Dalvin Cook, saving a little bit of cash. You look at the Philly backfield, letting Miles Sanders go, who had the biggest contract among running backs, and it's not even really something to write home about, but he did get paid more than anybody else at the running back position. Philly with Swift and Penny on one-year deals, and neither guy having a full season yet to date in the NFL, and then having Gainwell in the rookie contract and Scott, that's like $5 million for their running backs, right? Yeah. They just rotate through a lot of these guys, but I do believe Penny is in line for first and second down opportunities. And even though Jalen Hurts led all quarterbacks with roughly 20 goal line attempts, I still think Penny is that goal line back, very similar to what we saw last year in Detroit, where it wasn't Swift getting those touches inside the five, right? It was Jamal Williams, where I feel like Penny is that big body back. He's, you know, he grades well in terms of yards after contact and things like that. And it is a good offensive line of Philadelphia. So I think you got like some nice high upside running backs. Yeah. You're shooting for spike weeks, like you said. Let's take a quick break, John, if you don't mind. We'll dive into Amari Cooper and then kind of transition into the Cleveland Browns. I think that they're a really interesting squad. I want to get your thoughts on, let's see, the odds or, yeah, the chances, sure, I suppose, of Nick Chubb maybe getting 2,000 total yards. Sit on that for a second. We'll talk about the Brownies next. Keep her locked here. Mean Streets continues on Game Plus Network. Back in Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany here with you, and we are talking to John Mpemba. And as you see there on the note, it was actually John who broke the news to me in the commercial break in the green room. I do appreciate that. Melvin Gordon, just when you think this backfield could potentially be J.K. Dobbins mixing with a little Gus Edwards, they make it crowded again in Baltimore. Whether you believe in Melvin Gordon or not, according to reports, a one-year deal worth up to $3.1 million. That from Adam Schefter, Justice Hill sprinkled into this backfield as well. I just talked about Dobbins. I mean, I've been talking about him a couple times, John, and just like really excited for him. I know 2 years ago, the rookie campaign was great. The way he finished off the season, I think it was roughly 8 touchdowns in his last 8 or 9 games, not getting a ton of touches, but super efficient with the touches. And then his season was lost a couple years ago, a season ending injury before the campaign got underway. And then last year really kind of limited. But again, when he was touching the rock, he was super efficient carrying the football. I'm excited about this Ravens offense, bringing in Monken, and they ran 11 personnel fewer than anybody. You know, you got in some weapons and drafting Zay Flowers and Odell Beckham Jr. And if Bateman can stay on the field, you mentioned Andrews and what he's done for Lamar's game, and he got paid. Does this signing do anything for you? Does it make you feel a little bit uneasy about Dobbins? Like, what do you hear when you see Gordon now as a member of Baltimore?
Not really for Dobbins. I mean, if you were taking late round flyers and Gus Edwards, maybe now you're a little bit more concerned, because Gordon would probably take over that, you know, that role if he was to win the job in camp here. It's certainly an interesting signing, because he, I mean, Gordon looked pretty washed last year. Most people would look washed on that Broncos team the way they handled themselves last season. So it's an interesting watch. But I agree with you. I kind of like the way this offense is going to be, you know, expected to be utilized now, a little bit more downfield passing game. Teams can't just cheat and stop the run and double, you know, Andrews there and make these running backs or Lamar run through a heavy set defense. If they're spread out a little bit more, it creates more lanes, and Dobbins is a big play running back. So if he's back there, him and he can still find a lot of success getting those big chunk yards.
All Gordon did a couple of years ago was get in Javonte's way as a rookie, right? But he was actually pretty good that season. But Nathaniel Hackett, man.
If you're a head coach that needs an assistant coach just to manage the time, you probably shouldn't be a head coach in the NFL. So,
Broncos fans just must be so relieved, like, having Sean Payton there. It's got to work, though. It's got it. This is it, man. I could see Russ. Like, it was an absolute disaster. You feel like a bounce back season maybe for Russ?
I mean, I've taken shots on them because you're getting discounts on these players at ADP from where they were last year, with like the lone exception, Judy still kind of going where he was going last year. But I've taken Cortland Sutton where he's going in drafts, and I have taken some Russell Wilson just because of where they are. You're not really needing to rely on them to be your QB1, your wide receiver one or two like they were last year.
Let's talk about the Brownies here for a second. Maybe we can just dive into some of their fantasy assets. And if you don't mind, maybe we'll come out of the break and we'll take a look at their schedule. We can rapid fire through, see if we can, how many wins we can give them, John. Deshaun Watson here as quarterback 9. These are underdog fantasy ADPs here. Free tool over at FTM Fantasy. Nick Chubb is RB4. He's kind of creep up a little bit. Jerome Ford there as RB50. You took Amari Cooper on your squad. He's currently going as wide receiver 18 on average, pick 34.3. I thought the Browns bought low. We're always talking about buying low in dynasty. I thought that's exactly what Cleveland did with Elijah Moore in the offseason as wide receiver 44. Donovan Peoples-Jones, who I really do like as a flyer, especially in best ball leagues, is wide receiver 71 here. And then David Njoku is tight end 9. What do you make of this offense? How do you think it's going to look? And really, what was kind of a bit of a disaster for Deshaun, right? Like, Deshaun Watson just kind of in with the team, not a lot of reps with the squad towards the end of the season. Is this going to be a little bit more of a pass-happy offense? And do you think Deshaun Watson is going to be a top 10 quarterback in fantasy this year?
Listen, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, a lot of people like to pick very specific sample sizes when they make their cases for why people are you're in or out on certain players here. The last time we saw Deshaun Watson play a full season with like a full training camp and everything behind him, he was like QB5 overall in fantasy back when he was with Houston, probably what, 3 or 4 years ago now at this point. If he is back on sort of his pace, his schedule, he's familiar with the offense, he's getting an understanding, back with the pace and flow of an NFL game here, I think the talent is still there for him to be a successful player. He's not very old. He hasn't taken a lot of damage. You know, he's not coming off of an injury. He's coming off of a suspension. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, especially where he's going in drafts. You know, I do think that there's that potential that he has a bounce back season, and you're looking at a quarterback in that range that could break through and be a top 5 guy. He has at least a pedigree of a season like that under his belt. So willing to take some chances there.
And for Amari Cooper, only a couple games with him, right? And last year, a top 10 wideout in fantasy, his sixth 1,000-yard season, 1.65 yards per route run to 2.06 in his first year with the Browns. He was targeted more down the field, higher ADOT. He was third in end zone targets, a career-high 9 touchdowns on a buck 32 in terms of targets. Is there more room for him to grow? Like with Watson, you feel like much better quarterback play with him to start the season. We have him ranked as wide receiver 16. Do you feel like he could be a rock solid, maybe high end wide receiver 2 here?
I mean, I think it's possible, because if you look at sort of his numbers he had with Brissett as quarterback, you know, again, a guy that had the offseason, had the ability to get ready and go for the year. He was actually on pace for a bigger year. It's when they made the flip over to Watson. We saw Watson struggles that a lot of the end of season stats for some of these wide receivers didn't really look as great. But, you know, if you look at the handful of games he had with Brissett, he was pacing out for almost 90 catches and 1,200 yards, right? He fell short of that because Watson struggled. But the talent is certainly there to be the top target in that offense. So, yeah, listen, I took him as my wide receiver 1 in this league. Again, 14 teams, waited to take a wide receiver, so it was more okay with him there. But I do think that potential is there. He is one of the more highly targeted wide receivers in the red zone. He had like a 25 or 26% target share in this offense. So I am a big fan of Amari Cooper, who was also on my roster last year this league. So that worked out.
And last year he was going like wide receiver 40. Like nobody wanted a piece of this guy. He was one of the biggest steals in drafts. Do you have a preference between Moore or Donovan Peoples-Jones?
I think Moore, I think just for the pedigree here, again, they traded for him. He's a faster wide receiver. I think there's definitely a better skill set. Donovan Peoples-Jones, I'm a little worried on. He's in the final year of a deal. I know he's coming off of a breakout season, but again, another guy that you look at the numbers for him with Deshaun at quarterback, he had one good game against Cincinnati and then really wasn't looked at all that much. Now, he was on the field a lot, but then the team went and drafted Cedric Tillman, another big kind of outside wide receiver. They bring in Moore, who I think will play in the slot, where you saw Peoples-Jones play a lot of last year. It was over 20% of his snaps were in the slot. So, you know, you draft a guy in the third round, you have a guy that's kind of a hangover from an old regime that is on the final year of his deal. Maybe there's an overlap where Tillman passes him there. Plus, I think Njoku actually had pretty good, a decent rapport with Watson there. So there's a chance now, if that happens, that maybe Njoku takes on a bigger part of this offense as well. So I don't mind darts on Peoples-Jones if he's late enough, but I'm looking more at Moore and Njoku here, and Tillman as like a late last pick dart throw.
Yeah, you got to feel like Donovan Peoples-Jones is like best case scenario, the third, maybe even the fourth option, right? In the, in this passing game. And then you have Nick Chubb, who's had, you know, 5 1,000-yard seasons. This would be year number six. Actually, he's had four. He was like the rookie campaign that he had. He was just under 1K. But, you know, speaking of rookie season, his last final seven games as a rookie, he averaged just over two catches per game. And then in his sophomore season, he was on pace for 50 grabs at around the halfway point when the team brought in Kareem Hunt. And then all the usage out of the backfield in terms of third down roles and catching was just gone. Now Hunt is gone from the team. That's roughly 120 carries from last year, 25 in the red zone, 40 some odd targets. Do those targets now go to Chubb, or do you feel like Jerome Ford, who's really starting to pick up steam, he's rising up draft boards a little bit as like people's favorite late round running back to target in, you know, in best ball formats, doesn't really have any work really on the NFL resume. Do you feel like he's just going to step in and get a majority of Kareem Hunt's work, or is this going to be a bell cow? I'm with you. I think Chubb could flirt with 2K, man. I don't even think that's a hot take.
It's not a problem within the fantasy analyst industry, but they all sort of like to get some hot takes out there. And one guy said one thing about Jerome Ford now, and everybody's like, oh, here we go. Jerome Ford's going to come in and be the next Kareem Hunt. Like, based off what? He has no NFL workload. Sure, he had a great year in Cincinnati, his final year in college, but he got, you know, he didn't play at all. He was a fifth-round pick in the NFL. You're expecting him to just be the next Kareem Hunt when Nick Chubb is there? Like, there's not going to be a scenario where, in my opinion, Ford is going to be on the field with the same amount of snap share that Kareem Hunt is. And if that's the case, then we need to talk about what's going on in Cleveland, because Nick Chubb is an elite running back in all formats. He's an elite red zone guy. There were times last year where Hunt would be in the field in the red zone, and I'd be screaming why Nick Chubb's not on the field right now. That should not happen. Jerome Ford should not be playing over Nick Chubb unless he needs a spell, or, you know, they have a certain different like throw down play for him specifically. But this should be a Nick Chubb season. Nick Chubb workload. I was hammering him early on in Underdog when he was going like ADP 20, 22. Oh, yeah. And now, obviously, he's moving his way up because people, I think, are starting to realize, like, all right, what's Jerome Ford really? Nick Chubb is here. So if the Browns offense takes that step forward with Watson, Chubb is going to be an absolute monster. I do think we're going to see him catch some more footballs. I still think he was on pace, or he finished last year, what do you, with 30 catches or something like that?
Man, and week 18, like, I know it's just one game, but if that's a sign of things to come with potentially Watson, he had 6 targets, 5 grabs, 40-some-odd receiving yards, and a receiving touchdown. I know, again, it's just one game, but I think that this guy is going to be a true bell cow. He's my RB3. Yeah. I think he's going to lead the NFL in rushing yards. He just came off a season where he had a career high 1,500. He's been around that range before.
Yeah, I love him.
I really, And I'm with you, man. Just pulling my hair out. What is Kareem Hunt doing on the field inside the five? Like, we just know that's not going to happen with Ford. It's going to be Chubb all day.
Right.
We've gone a little long. If you don't mind, maybe two minutes. We'll come back out of the break, and we'll just rapid fire through the Brownie schedule. We'll see how many wins we can give them in what is an absolute loaded AFC conference. More after the break. Keep her locked. Got the senior manager content of Fantasy Alarm in the house. Loving this conversation here with John and Pemba. Jim Pemba 777 on the Twitter machine. George, let's bring up the Browns win total here. They're 40-1 to win the Super Bowl, 22-1 to win the conference, plus 425 to win the AFC North. And they have a win total here at 9.5. Let's have some fun here, John. We're going to rapid fire through this. I mean, things change, of course, from every time there's a surprise team. It doesn't matter. We'll have some fun here. They open up week one at home against the Bengals. We give them a win or a loss?
No, I can give them a loss.
All right, we're going to give them a loss. Week two in Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers.
They win.
Week three at home to take on the Titans with Hopkins on the squad.
They win again.
Week four at home against the Ravens.
They lose.
So we got them two wins here the first 4 weeks before they get into their bye week. Week five out of the bye at home against the Niners.
They lose.
Week seven in Indy.
They win.
Week eight in Seattle. 12th man.
They win.
All right. We got them four dubs, two in a row, maybe three in a row, I'd say. Week nine at home against Arizona.
Yeah, it's a win.
All right. Then in Baltimore, week 10.
They lose.
Week 11 at home to the Steelers.
They win.
Week 12 in Denver.
They lose.
Yeah, Maha is a tough place to play.
Maha's tough. It is.
It is. Week 13 in LA to take on the Rams.
They win.
Jacksonville, week 14 at home.
They win.
Ooh, I like that. Week 15 at home against the Bears.
They win.
They're picking up steam. Week 16 in Houston to take on the Texans.
They win. Yeah.
There's 10. Week 17 against the Jets at home.
I'll say they win, but I think that's going to be interesting to see where the Jets are at that point in the year.
Yeah, right? Both squads. And then week 18 in Cincy, potentially for the division on the line, if we got them roughly at 10 or 11 wins.
Yeah, they lose.
That's over. That's over the number at 9.5. Do you think that they're a decent little sprinkle to win the division at 425 or maybe the Super Bowl at 40-1? I know it's a loaded AFC and the path is easier in the NFC, but what do you think about that number?
I mean, I don't mind the AFC North one because obviously anything can really happen there and you're getting a little more than 4-1 on the pay. So I would do the North for sure.
John, I appreciate it, man. This has been a fun chat. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. I love being in the draft with you guys this year. I'm not going to lie. I'm coming after that that ring from Howard to give him the address. But why don't you take the time to let people know where they can catch all your work?
Yeah, you can obviously find me all over Fantasy Alarm and the Better Sports Network. I do the Quick Out Fantasy Show on Wednesdays. I do right now, it's MLB DFS season. So every night at 5 o'clock Eastern, I do the MLB DFS live stream. You can get me on Twitter at JMPemba777 over there. So go find me. Happy to answer your questions. Always down to talk ball, Chris.
I love the slots when I see 777. Like, it's give me all the seven.
Oh, yeah. Lucky number seven for me, 100%.
Yes or no, quickly. Shohei Ohtani, a member of the Angels after the trade deadline? Yes or no?
No shot.
What team does he play for?
That I don't know. A lot of people like the Yankees, but I don't think they have the prospects to get it done, man. So it's going to be interesting to see who goes out and grabs them. But if you're the Angels, you cannot let him walk away for nothing. You got to get something.
I agree, man. You got to trade this guy. Best baseball player, arguably, that we're ever going to see. You got to get something for him because you know he's walking. I appreciate your time so much. We got some MLB picks here around the corner. Keep her locked. See you, John. Ohtani Day. I don't know if it's going to be his last start. I just feel like the Angels are going to do something silly and keep this guy. I really do. I agree with John. I've said it all year. You got to trade this guy. You got to let him. You can't just let him walk for nothing. But we're going to continue to attack his strikeout props. He's at 7.5 today. And this number has changed a little bit. I just took a look at it. It's roughly minus 135 now for him to have over 7.5 strikeouts. We had him earlier in the bet tracker at minus 115. But again, that's the perks of being involved over at FTMBets.com. You get notified right away. We have Discord channels. You get that early number. I encourage everybody to check out the Prop Shop, free tool over at FTNBets.com. So you'll get the best possible number, save yourself a little bit of cash. But for Shohei Ohtani, a matchup here against the Pittsburgh Pirates, they're swinging a lot and missing quite a bit. I remember that hot start from Pittsburgh, right? When they were like up at the top of the division and then we were starting to drink the Cincinnati Reds Kool-Aid. The Pirates have come back down to earth. They have a 26% strikeout rate over the last month of baseball. It's the fourth highest mark, and they have a lot of swing and miss. As I mentioned, a high swinging strike percentage. So Shohei's been basically automatic here at home for quite some time. Like over basically the past 2 years, this guy has been automatic at home. You look at his splits over at Fangraphs, like sub 2 ERA, and I expect him to probably go 6 or 7 innings here. He has struggled with the command, which does get him into some trouble. I would say the pitch count gets a little bit higher than he would like. But this Pirates team, I mean, they don't have a lot of walks in their game. They don't have a lot of power. I think Ohtani will get it done here. And I like Framber Valdez. This is a guy that we've been going to quite a bit. We had him last week at over 6.5 strikeouts. He punched out 13. It was actually a matchup against Ohtani and the Halos. But he's got a 9.8 K per nine. It's like, that's not elite. It's a strikeout per inning, but the matchup against Oakland is elite. Like the Athletics are near the bottom in every single category. And again, over the last month, they have the sixth highest strikeout rate, just behind the Pirates, are striking out 25% of the time. So for Framber, I mean, I think he's in the Cy Young conversation. He keeps the ball on the ground. He doesn't get into a whole lot of trouble. And this game is happening in Oakland against the A's. And we're also, as you saw on the board, we're going to ride with the team total. We got burned yesterday. We did have the Astros over 4.5 runs. We also had them on the run line, which we did get. But the over 4.5, a matchup against J.P. Spears, the lefty. And we talked yesterday about some of these bats that are heating up in Houston. In particular, Alex Bregman historically hits lefties pretty well, struggling this year against southpaws, but this is a guy that is, you can see him and Jose Abreu, like, really not surprised that Jose Abreu struggled to start the season. He's a little bit older, but he is a better bat than what we saw in the first half, and he's starting to put together some good swings, as is Alex Bregman. We mentioned Chaz McCormick yesterday, another decent day for him. He at least got on base, Kyle Tucker as well. So I do like the Astros and the Braves, and it doesn't feel like I'm breaking a lot of news here because Atlanta's just rolling, but I think Vegas is giving us a little bit of a freebie here. There's nothing free. I don't want to say this is a lock or anything, but anytime that we can get the Atlanta Braves at 4.5 runs, you know, roughly -115 on the road, but in Milwaukee, which is a good hitter's ballpark, and taking on Freddy Peralta. Freddy Peralta's had a couple decent starts lately, but ultimately this guy has struggled significantly with walks. His last few games, 2-3-2-3-3-2. Those are his walks. If you're going to walk through two batters against the Braves, you're going to give up some crooked numbers. So he's struggling with the long ball. He's been very inconsistent this season, missing most of last year due to a shoulder injury and slow starting this year as well. So taking the Braves over 4.5, the Astros in on Ohtani 7.5, and in on Framber Valdez at over 6.5 punchouts as well. More over at FTNBets.com. One final segment here on Mean Streets. We'll be back in a couple. Misspoke in the last block. Ohtani sub-3 ERA at home this season. Sub-2 last year, 1.82, but opponents are hitting under 200 against him over the last 2 years at Angel Stadium. So even though it's a high number, don't be afraid. 7.5, take the over. Going to give a little bit of love here to Circa Las Vegas on the way out. They are running a fantastic contest here. Circa Millions, $1 million to first place, $3.65 million in prizes from second to 100th place, $300K in prizes for each quarter of the season, $100K and $50K to last place finishers. So, I mean, that's pretty good. If you come last place, you're going to earn yourself a little bit of cash, $6 million in guaranteed prizes, $1,000 to enter, and you can enter up to 5 times. Check it out, Circa. LasVegas.com. Have a great weekend. We're out of here. Check out the FTN Fantasy Show coming your way. Sirius XM, 9 a.m. Eastern, channel 87 on the dial. We'll talk to you on Monday. Cheers.